You're listening to Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Coming up later in the program, it's our Wisconsin News Roundup. We'll recap the top state news stories of the week, including a look at who Milwaukee County elected to sit on the judicial bench.
First, cookbooks have come a long way since the days of scrawling out recipes on 3x5 white index cards. Most cookbooks today are full of large, colorful photos and detailed steps and tips for preparing the food. But what happens when you combine a cookbook with a comic book?
Robin Ha joins us now. She's not a chef. She's actually a comic book illustrator whose work has appeared in the pages of Marvel Comics and Heavy Metal Magazine. Her recipe comic book, Cook Korean, contains colorful, humorous comic illustrations that show the ingredients and steps for cooking traditional Korean recipes. Robin, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me here.
So you've actually been drawing comics longer than you've been cooking. So let's start with the drawing. When did you get started drawing?
I wanted to be an artist since I was like 7 years old. I started reading comics just as I was old enough to read Korean alphabet. And I just got really hooked. So I didn't know what else I wanted to do with my life other than drawing comics.
What was your life like in your young years and your mom cooking?
My mom was a busy working mom, so she had not that much time to cook, but she cooked for me like every day. Every meal she made was delicious, but she made it like so quickly that I had like no idea how she did anything. So I thought it was something that I could never learn to do. And I just stuck to drawing comics. So when I was young, like, I never had interest in cooking until I grew up, actually, and I had to live by myself in New York. That's when I started to cook.
And so you've been drawing since you can remember. You've been cooking since you've had to basically feed yourself. But how did you decide to write a Korean cookbook and make it a comic book at that?
So I was sharing a studio in Brooklyn with other cartoonists, and one of them, Ellen Lindner, was editing an anthology about food, and she asked me to contribute a comic. So I was just thinking about doing a recipe comic for her anthology. And I actually had a lot of fun drawing this one-page recipe comic for her anthology, and I thought, like, maybe I could do this for fun. And at the same time, a lot of people around me were getting really interested in Korean food, and they're asking me how I made all this food I bring to work. So I thought that was just a good way for me to, like, share my recipe with a lot of people. So it just kind of came out really naturally. I never thought of making a cookbook. It was just a side fun project that I can kind of take my mind off of other design work and just do something for fun. And then next thing I know that I get a email from a cookbook publisher asking me to do a cookbook.
Wow.
So, yep.
Robin, we are so excited to cook with you. Can you, first of all,
thank
we
you.
Really want to get into it here. Tell us about the key ingredients used in Korean cuisine.
So we have the seven key ingredients that you absolutely need to have to make anything Korean in Korean cooking. And they are Korean red chili flakes, we call gochugaru. And soybean paste, we call doenjang, and toasted sesame seed, and toasted sesame oil, fish sauce, and soy sauce, and most importantly, red chili paste, we call gochujang. So most of these are actually available these days at a regular grocery shop. Like I found gochujang in Giant and Whole Foods, and you know it's really amazing how far Korean cuisine has come in America. Basically, you need to get these. If you can get it at an Asian grocery store, you should go and, you know, just have fun time shopping there. But if not, you can actually order these online, too. And gochujang and gochugaru, those are kind of the key ingredients to make your food spicy. Like, Korean food has this reputation of being spicy. And it usually comes from these two ingredients. You probably would like to go to an Asian or Korean grocery store to get those two.
Yeah.
We're talking with Robin Ha. She is an illustrator, a comic illustrator, and she's written a comic book cookbook called Cook Korean. And Robin, I have to tell you, I really love Korean food. And I think in large part, it's because of all those great little side dishes that come with every meal. It's like a little picnic smorgasbord. Tell us about those accompaniments.
So we call those little side dishes banchan, and there's like hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of them. But there are a couple that are really key in Korean banchan. They are called kimchi. Kimchi is like most people know it as a napa cabbage or daikon radish pickle, but you can make kimchi with like any vegetables. It just has to be salted and fermented. And the other one is called namul, which is basically like blanched or sauteed vegetable dish. And I think kimchi is probably the most famous item in Korean cuisine. And a lot of people think it's like difficult to make or like something they couldn't understand how to make it, but it's actually very easy to make. And I would recommend people to actually try making it at home because it's really... making kimchi takes like an hour or two these days. Like you don't really have to bury it in the ground or anything like that the way traditional Koreans did. But if you make it, it goes a long way. You know, it really doesn't go bad. And you can eat it like when it's actually really well fermented. It tastes better. And you can use it in like Korean spicy stew called kimchi jjigae or like kimchi pancake. Or kimchi fried rice, you know, there's so many different ways to use it. So it's definitely you should try.
In your cookbook, you show different variations on kimchi. Tell us about the secret to making really good kimchi and these different variations on it.
So kimchi is basically salted and fermented vegetable. So you can actually kind of tweak your own seasoning. So if you don't like too spicy food, you don't really have to put that much chili flakes in there. But I would say that you should salt your vegetable with plenty of salt. And you need to leave it in salt for long enough time that your vegetable is kind of limp but also kind of flexible. So like, let's say if you're salting napa cabbage for napa cabbage kimchi, you should leave it and you would know when it's well salted, when you can bend the leaf and it wouldn't break. You know, it will just bend because it's salted.
And is there
Go
ahead, Robin.
So when you bend it, you know, like if it's not salted well enough, the napa cabbage would break. It will snap. You know, but if it's well salted, you could bend it without breaking it.
And does it matter what kind of salt?
You should use a kosher sea salt, like a big crystal sea salt.
So, Robin, your book also has a lot of noodle-centered recipes. Can you tell us about your recipe that we have featured on the Central Time Facebook page? It's spicy cold noodles.
It's one of my favorite dishes to make in the summertime, and it's like so easy to make. Basically, you have to boil the noodle, and you have to make this sauce with gochujang, the red chili paste that I mentioned. And the topping can be anything between like your favorite salad material, like lettuce and cucumber, and you know, tomato if you want, anything you like. But I usually put kimchi on top.
Oh.
Because kimchi has that fresh kind of like spicy kick to it. And what makes this cold noodle dish very special is the sauce. And it's like really versatile sauce that you can use it for not only this dish, but you can also use for other like bibimbap, you know, the rice dish with like a lot of vegetable on top. Or anything you like. It's a really good sauce to have just on the side. And you make it with gochujang, the red chili paste, and vinegar and sugar. That's the key ingredient. And I usually add pureed apple in it.
Mm.
Traditionally, you should use Asian pear, but Asian pear is kind of hard to find sometimes, or it's very expensive. So I just use a regular, like, Fuji apple, and they taste great.
On these sauces you're making here, are you measuring, or are you just tossing together and tasting?
I mean, when I cook for myself and my family, I never measure anything. And like most Korean mothers or anyone Korean would never measure anything. But to write this book, I had to measure everything. And that was probably the most difficult part about writing this book.
Well, we appreciate you taking that effort so the rest of us can follow in your footsteps. We're learning how to cook Korean food with Robin Ha. She's the author of Cook Korean, a comic book with recipes.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you love Korean food? If so, what's your favorite Korean dish? Or maybe you're a comic book fan. What do you think of the idea of melding a comic book with a cookbook? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll pick up this conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Robin Ha, author of Cook Korean, a comic book with recipes.
And you can share any Korean food-related questions or comments with us by calling 800-642-1234 or by posting on the Central Time Facebook page. Do you cook Korean food at home? Tell us what your favorite Korean dish is. Or maybe you're a comic book fan. What do you think of this idea of a cookbook comic book? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Robin, you devote a good bit of space in your cookbook comic book to porridges, Korean porridges called juk. Tell us about those.
Mm-hmm. So juk is basically like pureed rice. So, like, it's really good for kids who, like, doesn't have much teeth in their mouth, or, like, if you're old and weak or if you're sick, because it's very, like, easy to digest. You don't have to chew anything. And it's actually a big part of our cuisine, and there are some really fine dining juk, like, traditional juk that, like, used to be in King's Table. And also there are, like, pretty versatile. You could put anything, any vegetable or any meat on it, just like how you'd make grits or like a gumbo, you know, like seafood gumbo or something like that. It's very similar in that sense that you basically boil grain for a really long time, and then it becomes very mushy, and you just add like a flavor to it. So, yes.
There are sweet and savory versions.
Yeah, yeah. So I usually like kind of sweet juk. And one of my favorite juk is hobak juk, which is really easy to make. And it's really healthy because it's like 99% pureed pumpkin.
Ooh.
There's not much else in there. Yeah. So in the fall season, I always make hobak juk at home. So you basically boil kabocha, squash, I guess you use squash, but I mean, it's kabocha. Kabocha has more sweetness already in their pumpkin. Like, you don't have to add too much to it. So you basically boil it, and when it's really soft, you puree it, and then you boil it again with some rice flour to thicken it, and you add more sugar if you like more sweet flavor. And we usually put little tiny rice balls in there we call ongsimi, which is basically like a rice cake made out of glutinous rice flour. And you can buy it or you can make it at home. It's very easy to make. And it's just a really good treat. And then you can eat that cold or hot, whichever you like.
So Korean barbecue seems to be very popular right now. What are the flavors or ingredients or the way of cooking in particular that makes it Korean barbecue?
I think you need to make carby in basically like an open flame. So it's you don't have to have a charcoal or anything, but like it, you gotta have a really high temperature to cook it right. So you can use gas stove or you can use charcoal also, but the way we grill it is that we grill it right on the table. So if you go to Korean restaurants, you'll see like the hole in the table and they actually put charcoal in there or have a gas burner and you can eat like basically sizzling right off the fire meat. So that's, I think, what makes kalbi really special. And also the flavor, we use a lot of garlic in our seasoning, and I think the garlic flavor and the soy sauce season that we use, that kind of defines the Korean barbecue flavor. So, like, the soy sauce and garlic and also sugar, that's kind of the main ingredient that goes into the garbi sauce. And you don't have to use the rib, beef rib for it. You can use also pork or chicken or any other turkey if you want, any kind of meat. And also the way we eat it, we usually wrap it in a lettuce, like a fresh lettuce. Mm-hmm. And you can also grill other type of vegetable. We usually grill more garlic on top on that open flame. Or you can add kimchi or fresh green pepper to make it even more spicier. And you just like pile it on a fresh lettuce with the kalbi and also white rice, cooked rice. And then you wrap it, and then you put it in your mouth, and it just makes it a lot more like nutritious and also very flavorful.
Do you baste that meat? Are you doing anything to the meat before you're putting it on the grill?
Oh yeah, we have to marinate it.
Okay.
So you make the sauce that I mentioned, and then you usually put kiwi or Asian pear in the sauce.
Okay.
So that fruit has some kind of enzyme to break down the protein, so it makes the meat more tender. So you should put it in the refrigerator for at least 3 hours in the marinade, so the meat kind of soak up the flavor and also becomes more tender. Then you cook it.
Okay.
So, Robin, you also have a chapter highlighting Korean cocktail recipes. Can you walk us through what you call the three unspoken rules of drinking in Korea?
Yeah. So a lot of foreigners who go there, they have no idea about this rule because nobody talks about it. But every Korean person knows this, and I don't know who made this rule, but it has always been this way forever. So the first, I think it comes from the Confucius teaching about like it's respecting the elders. So when you drink, you should always pour drinks for the elders. So elder can be like old people, but it can also be just somebody who's older than you. Like even if they're like 1 year older than you, they're still your elder. So you have to pour them a drink. And when you pour them a drink, you have to pour it with both hands. So it kind of like you're cupping the other hand that's pouring the drink to kind of like steady it or make it look more polite. So that's the first rule. And the second rule is that once your elder drinks their drink, they'll offer you a drink and you can't refuse it. You have to drink the drink that's poured from your elder. So it's very considered rude to refuse drinking from your elder. So if if your colleague is older than you and they're all, they love to drink, then you're in trouble because they'll keep pouring drinks for you and can't refuse it. And when you drink it, you have to face away from the elder when you drink the drink. Yeah. And the third one is that you should never pour your own drink. It's a bad luck, to pour your own drink. So yeah, somebody else has to kind of check on you, see if you need more drink, and then pour your drink for you. So it kind of promotes like even drinking, like not one person drinks too much or like too fast, so everybody kind of enjoys the social aspects of drinking together. It's viewed really bad luck to drink by yourself in Korea. So you're always drinking with people and also with food. which we call anju. It's like kind of like, it could be like light snack, like, you know, chips or whatever, but it could also be like a full-on dinner. So I think it's kind of healthier that way, that you don't, like, you know, drink too much and, like, an empty stomach, you know.
Robin,
and you have more fun.
Robin, mm-hmm. I don't mean to circle back to kimchi, but everything comes back to kimchi. So it's like, it's okay. I go back to kimchi. I have this fear. I have this fear that I'm going to do the fermentation wrong, so that I never make kimchi, because I'm so fearful of getting of the whole fermentation part. Get me over this.
So fermentation really isn't. You don't have to do anything. You just have to leave it in the room temperature. And when you should use like a glass jar to pack your kimchi in, and then leave maybe like an inch on the top, because sometimes in like especially hot summer days, you will ferment really quickly and then it will like bubble up, and then like you'll have like a messy floor because like the kimchi just will flow out of the jar. So always leave some room in the top, and you just have to, like, if it's cold, then you should leave it for a little longer time. So, like, for Napa cabbage, I usually leave it out for, like, 2 days.
Okay.
But, but you will see, like, it depends. So, like, if it's hotter days, you don't need to leave it out for that long. So the way you check it is that when you look at the kimchi juice in the jar, you'll see little bubbles forming. So that means it's ready. So the bubble comes out when it's fermenting. The, lactic acid is making, like, gas.
Robin, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That was author and comic illustrator Robin Ha, and her book is called Cook Korean, a Cook Comic Book with Recipes. You can look at the recipes on the Ideas Network.